Thank you. And I also thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk here. So the outline of the talk, I'll do the introduction very, very short. Then I'll talk about some principles for spatial discretization of the Hamiltonian operator, how to choose basis functions. I'll briefly describe what the current approaches are for choosing distributed Gaussian bases. Then I'll make some observations on these methods, leading to some improvements, and then I'll end the talk. So the Hamiltonian is a fundamental thing in quantum mechanics, and what determines a particular system is the potential function. I'll give one or two examples soon. But the thing to note now is that the dimensions, the number of variables here, can go very large. For example, n atom molecules, we need 3n minus 6 degrees of freedom to describe them. And another sort of quantum system we might like to consider is something called quantum dots. You can think of it as electrons confined to be on a plane. And there is some additional trapping potential which restricts them to a certain region in that plane. And in these kind of systems, the number of variables we need, the number of variables appearing in the Hamiltonian, is twice the number of particles. Now, having the Hamiltonian, we would like to find its eigenvalues, also called energies, and the eigenfunctions. The dynamics is given by Schrödinger's equation, but I'm just talking about the eigenproblem now. I'm not talking about dynamics. Okay, so if we solve the eigenproblem, what does it tell us? The immediate thing is if we know the eigenvalues, we know the what frequencies of light such a system can absorb or emit, and the physicists and chemists know to calculate much more from the eigenfunctions. And these calculations are generally hard. The main difficulty is the high dimensions. We're talking here about PDEs with many variables. And the domains are non-trivial. And I'll show here an example taken from a paper by Bacic and Light from 1986. We have here the potential surface for a 3-atom molecule where, maybe I'll do it on the board. So, a 3-atom molecule where two of the atoms are rigidly attached to each other. And the third one is restricted, well, it's a planar molecule. The third one can rotate about them. So the variables they use to describe the system are the distance of the free atom for the center of those and the angle. And this surface shows us some typical features of such systems. One thing, okay, so this is the R coordinate, and this is the theta. And one thing is that as R gets smaller and we are sort of compressing the particles together, the potential rises very steeply. So they resist this compression very much. And they also resist stretching. But if this would go on, then we would see that the potential sort of flattens out. And reaching that region means that we've broken the bond. And another thing to note is that there's a sort of curvy-shaped low potential valley, and that's where the solutions live. That's where the eigenfunctions are supported, and that's where the dynamics happens. So this is our domain with a non-trivial geometry. That's where we'd like to approximate the solutions to the Schrödinger equations. Okay, we also have the space oscillations. The solutions will have spatial oscillations and time oscillations. And I'll just deal with the spatial parts now, because if we can do these efficiently, we are in a better position to deal with the dynamics. What is the the limit to what people can calculate now. This is an example of a recent paper from 2005, where Carrington and co-workers have found the first several hundreds of eigenvalues in a methane molecule. So that's a 5-atom molecule with 9 degrees of freedom. That's the hardest calculations that people can do these days. Okay, spatial discretization. I think we would all agree that to construct that good basis functions should somehow capture the properties of our system. So let's look a bit at the properties of such systems. What we have here is the Morse potential, which appeared in an earlier talk 1 or 2 days ago. This is the Morse potential. This is its functional form. And it's a standard model used to describe two-atom molecules. So if we have a two-atom molecule, we need just one variable to describe the state of this system, the distance between the particles, between the atoms, and they have some equilibrium distance. And what appears here on this axis is the actual distance r minus r0. You see that when this r minus r0 is equal to 0, we are here at the potential minimum. And you see when they are getting close together, they resist this. And they also resist stretching up to the point where the bond is broken. And also plotted here are the first few, well, a few eigenfunctions. This is the lowest one. This is the 10th. And this is the 23rd, which is the last in the discrete part of the spectrum. And I'm restricting just to the discrete part of the spectrum. So let's look at the highest eigenfunction now. We can write the Schrodinger equation that for it like this. And suppose that the E here is the exact eigenvalue of this highest eigenfunction. And to understand the local behavior of the solution, let's approximate this with a constant coefficient equation in a neighborhood of a point. And in that neighborhood, the solution is more or less in the space spanned by such oscillatory exponentials. Now we are in the region where the eigenvalue is greater than the potential. And in the region where the eigenvalue is smaller than the potential, the solution will behave more or less well. It will be spanned by such functions, and you can see that in the low potential regions, this frequency will be large, and the oscillations will be the most severe. You see this here. And as we move to higher potential regions, the oscillation become more gentle until we reach the region where the energy is smaller than the potential, and we pass through a regime of exponential decay. So this is the properties of our system, that the solutions are highly oscillatory in low potential regions, less oscillatory in high potential regions, and eventually exponentially decaying in the what we can call the classically forbidden region, where a classical particle would not go because its energy is too small. And another thing to note is that if we construct basis functions which can produce good approximation of the highest eigenfunction, then they can probably produce good approximations of all the lower ones, because the highest oscillates the most in the low potential regions, and it reaches furthest out into the high potential regions. So these observations, sort of, is what guided people in choosing Gaussian radial basis functions. So just to set the notations, the center, this Xi is the center of the Gaussian, and I'll sometimes call it also a node. the WI we call the width parameter, and C the global width parameter. So the WI determine the relative width of the Gaussians to each other, and varying C we can make them all wider or narrower together. And there's a sequence of work that eventually led up to this one, which is, as far as I know, the only one giving a method for distributing the centers in multidimensional problems in a way that that respects the, what we've just described about the properties of the solution, in a way that respects the they're denser in low potential regions and further apart in high potential regions. So, very brief description of their algorithm is to distribute the nodes quasi-randomly. Well, first of all, before that, they begin by choosing an Emax, which is an upper bound for the eigenvalues we want to approximate. And with this Emax, there goes the potential regions where V, where Vx is smaller than Emax. And they allow nodes only in these regions. So this corresponds to the low energy value which over there. Within that region, we distribute the nodes quasi-randomly with this density. They also consider this density without the square root. Once they've chosen the nodes, the width parameters are defined in this way. And they also observe that the accuracy improves as C gets smaller and the Gaussians get wider up to a certain limit. So this corresponds to the basic explanation we just gave about the properties of the solution. You see that these centers are denser in low potential regions. And and now comes the problem. So, before talking about the problem, they do some numerical calculations, including a water molecule, and they find that their bases give good accuracy with much fewer basis functions compared to previous approaches. So this is good. And now we can describe the problem and even improve this. Let me get back to this slide so that we can see the formulas. And let's look again at the most potential. And look at the choice of the width, at the choice of WI. So suppose we have a point X, which is somewhere here in a high potential region. Our X is here. VXI here would be very close to the our upper bound on the energies, and the width parameter will be small, and that means we'll have a wide Gaussian. So suppose that our Gaussian will look something like this here. Is it visible? Okay. This is visible, more or less. And this seems okay. It's more or less corresponding to the properties of the solution there. But now, we need Gaussian centers also in the classically allowed region where V is smaller than Emax, but on this side, where the potential is steep. The width parameter depends just on evaluation of the potential at the point. And the potential value is similar here. So we'll have Gaussians with the width similar to what we had before. But here this seems wrong. This doesn't correspond to what the solution does here. We would expect that we need here much narrower Gaussians, corresponding to the I apologize for the quality of the drawings with the marker, but I hope you understand the idea. We need a narrow Gaussian there. So, that's one modification we'd like to do. We'd like to decrease the width of the Gaussian, and that means to make the width parameter larger in those steep potential regions. And if we start to make the Gaussians narrower, we also need to increase the density to avoid getting sort of holes in our function space. And what's going wrong here? This choice, the Gauss-Chouk-Light choice, it basically corresponds to constant coefficient approximations of our equation. And in the steep potential regions, such approximation holds only in a very, very small neighborhood. So if these sort of local considerations make you choose Gaussians whose width give you a much wider neighborhood where these constant coefficient approximation hold, then all this is meaningless. I mean, this is meaningless in the high potential regions. Okay, so this is the main idea. We need narrower and denser Gaussians in the steep potential regions. And one simple way to achieve this, at least in one and maybe two dimensional problems, is to choose the nodes and widths according to the Gauss-Chouk-Light method, but with a modified potential that will give us the density. And here you see the modified potential. Instead of the full MOS potential, I replaced it with this sort of step potential. So the steep part is in a way replaced by this vertical wall. And the valley is flattened. What sort of basis functions does this lead to? You can see here an illustration of the basis function parameters. The black nodes, which become too dense here, are the Gaussian centers. They are for that system over there. And the circles above are the width parameters. This graph corresponds to the let's call it the modified basis chosen with the modified potential, and you can see that the width parameters here are rather large and the Gaussians will be narrow and dense in the steep potential region. And these two graphs, they correspond to the Gauss-Chouk-Light bases. This one is the full Gauss-Chouk-Light algorithm with a quasi-random distribution of centers, and this one with a deterministic distribution with the same density. And before showing some results, note that we have here 48 functions, 48 basis functions in our function space, and we will use them to approximate the eigenfunctions and eigenvalues of this system, and there are 24 of them. So we are using just twice the number of the eigenfunctions we want to approximate. So, up here, you see the log of errors in eigenvalues for this system. And this is the log of errors for eigenfunctions. This is the index of the eigenvalue and eigenfunction. There are a total of 24 of them. Let's look at the eigenvalue graph. So up here are the Gauss-Chouk-Light bases. And this is with the modified basis, chosen with the modified potential. And you can see that the error is order of magnitudes better. The error in the lowest eigenvalue here is at 10 to the minus 16. And for the random distribution in the Gauss-Chouk-Light algorithm, we have here 10 to the minus 8, and here 10 to the minus 11 with the deterministic node. And also in the eigenfunctions, the error is order of magnitude better. Okay, now another point is reading the literature, some papers explicitly state that collocation is as accurate as Galerkin. And starting to work with this, I saw that it's not quite so. Here, the global width parameter, you know, we have These are our basis functions. So this C was chosen optimally for collocation and for Galerkin. And we have here errors in eigenvalues and errors in eigenfunctions for the three different basis sets. And you can see that, at least in this example, the Galerkin errors in circles were always orders of magnitude better than the collocation errors. So, you see that I'm ahead of time, but I'm still at the end of the talk. This is the main lesson learned here, that we probably, such point-wise considerations for choosing the at least the width of Gaussian basis functions probably will lead us to a not good enough choice. And the thing is that each such basis function has some neighborhood where it feels the solution, and we should make this neighborhood compatible with the solution properties in it. And we might think of some iterative process to correct the width of basis functions until they become compatible with the estimated solution properties there. We should be careful before we embrace the collocation as accurate as Galerkin. And well, I don't have enough results to say anything solid about this, but I did get the impression from calculations I did that there is an increase in errors associated with the random choice of centers. So it might be fruitful to consider other choices for distributing the nodes. And of course, it would be good to go on to time-dependent problems and to give a rigorous error analysis for these methods. Before finishing, I'll say that this work is part of the Computational Dynamics of Quantum Systems project supported by the Norwegian Research Council. Thank you very much.
The sort of non-Gaussian Gaussians that you have later are eerily similar to multi-quadrics. And early in the history of using radial basis functions, everybody was thinking that Gaussians must be the best.
Yeah.
Because they are very tight and small support, decay fast.
Yeah.
But actually, it turns out that multi-quadrics, although they don't decay very fast, the linear combinations decay very, very rapidly. Mm-hmm. So the question is whether you shouldn't move altogether to multi-quadrics. Okay.
There is some work in using multi-quadrics for such problems by Rabbits and co-workers. I didn't look at it. It might be, so I read his papers, but I don't know how they compare to Gaussians. But the main thing here is not the choice of Gaussian basis functions, but the lessons we can learn on how to locate the centers and how to adjust the widths. And I suppose that would be applicable to multi-quadrics as well.
Yeah, it's a follow-up question, because
There
is a great deal of work currently in using radial basis functions in meshless methods for PDEs, which here will fall under sort of time-dependent problem, bullet point. People like Holger Wendland, Robert Trabak, Martin Buhmann, and so on. So the question is whether one can marry this sort of concepts. And another question is, once you're using multi-quadrics, they're incredibly rapid methods of solving linear systems. So again, this is not eigenvalues like in your case, but say time-dependent, essentially as fast as fast multiple methods. People like Lipsley, Bits, and Mike Powell, and so on. Mm-hmm. So again, I think that if you move to multi-quadrics, you should be able to exploit all that.
Okay. But I suppose that there are specific considerations for the Schrödinger equation, which should always be taken into account.
Mm-hmm. More questions? Well, if not, then we thank the speaker. Thank you.